You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, brought to you by Full Sneak Gear. Check out their entire lineup at fullsneakgear.com. Also, be sure to check out our entire stable of podcasts at sportsmansempire.com. Attention, if you're an eastern whitetail hunter with dreams of hunting elk, antelope, or mule deer out west, but are overwhelmed with the knowledge gap, look no further than Outdoor Class. Outdoor Class features professionally produced courses taught by the world's leading outdoor experts and can be consumed on your phone, computer, or TV. Visit OutdoorClass.com and start the process of making your hunting dreams come true. Use discount code EMPIRE20 at checkout for 20% off. Yo, 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 what's up, everybody? Welcome to the Hunting Gear Podcast. I'm your host, Dan Johnson, and today we're going to be talking with Ev Terrell. Is it Terrell? God, he says it, but I mess it up every time. I think it's Terrell, of Code of Silence, and half the company is based in Iowa, and half the company is based in Nebraska, and if you haven't heard of Code of Silence, it is a brand new company. For the most part, it's brand new. I think they've only been out a couple years, and they are a camo apparel company. And so fleece and wool and the demographic focus on this, I guess, would be like your tree stand whitetail hunter, your Midwestern whitetail hunter, for conditions of cool to cold, you know, that October to November timeframe. And I was walking down the halls of the ATA, and this product just kind of caught my eye because there's a lot of stuff on the market right now, and this is just my opinion at this point, that I'm just not a fan of, whether it is from a durability standpoint, whether it is from a design and construction standpoint, or whether it is from a material standpoint. Like obviously I'm a huge fan of wool and the benefits of wool. And so I was walking by their booth, I stopped, I took a look at it, and I go, I can see myself wearing this type of gear. And there's a story behind the camo pattern, there's a story behind the apparel, there's a story about his experience and how he jumped from 30 years at Cabela's to this position here, and to designing and creating this line at Code of Silence. And so it's a really cool story about a brand new company doing some really cool things, and I hope you guys enjoy it. Before we get into today's episode though, we got to do the commercial block here. And first off, I just want to say, please don't skip through these because I know a lot of guys can hit that fast forward 10 seconds button. But what this allows me to do is say, hey, listen, this many people are hearing this. That's how I make my money. And I know a lot of people probably don't care about that, but it's very important for me to be able to go to, you know, a potential partner or someone and go, hey, this is the analytics I have. This is how many people are listening to this, and that just helps me out. Also, please go to iTunes, leave a 5-star review, let everybody know that you like the Hunting Gear Podcast and that the information coming out of the Hunting Gear Podcast is beneficial. So if you are looking for a saddle, go check out Tethered. Tethered has a complete lineup of saddles, platforms, climbing sticks, saddle hunting accessories, everything that you need to get started in the saddle hunting game. But on top of that, and this is what I've been using recently, is I've been watching a lot of content surrounding saddle hunting and the strategy and how to set up and how to tear down and how to position yourself properly and be comfortable while in the tree, not only on their website, but on YouTube as well. So they have a whole bunch of content that's beneficial. So if you're looking for a saddle, go check out Tethered. If you are looking for a hunting app, whether you already have one, but if you want the best whitetail focused hunting app on the market, right, you need to go check out HuntStand. HuntStand.com. Read up on all the functionality, read up on the ability to interchange maps that allow you to see terrain or drainage, you know, how water drains through the landscape. It allows you to find property owners. All that stuff it comes basic. But then if you really want to get into it, they offer a pro whitetail platform. And what that is it shows things like historic rut dates and maps. And it tells you, you know, where the rut kicks off certain times of year. And that allows you to plan your hunt and maybe even forecast some deer movement. They have a little bit of forecasting. They have a weather portion of all that. And so it's just a really good way to be in. You can do your e-scouting, you can journal, you can, you know, basically be in the mindset of deer hunting all year round, just at, you know, because you have an app on your phone. So it's a huge, any downtime is I pull up Hunt Stand, I start messing around with it. And last but not least, we have the Tacticam 6.0, brand new this year. Go check out Tacticam's website. Go pull up the 6.0. If you love to document your hunts, whether you want to screw it into your bow or you want to mount it to your gun, the Tacticam has the ability to have 4K. It has image stabilization. It has an LCD screen, so you can, you know, review what you've just recorded. And so it's really, not only does it have the ability to allow you to check your shot, you know, like, oh man, after the hunt, after I shot something, I want to go recover it. Let's see where the shot was. And that'll tell me, hey, was it a good shot? Was it a bad shot? Do I need to wait? On top of that, you can go home, you can show this footage to your kids and say, hey, look what dad saw tonight. Or, you know, go show some buddies, hey, what do you think of this buck? Just share the memories and keep the memories. So those are the commercials. Also, please go check out 2% for Conservation. It is a conservation organization that lets you be in charge of where you put your time and your money. Fishandwildlife.org. Go check it out. All right, so let's get over to today's episode with Ev Terrell. All right, on the phone with me today from Code of Silence, Ev Terrell. How we doing?
Hey, doing awesome. How are you, Dan?
I'm doing good, man. Doing good. And so this podcast kind of started this year at the ATA show. And I'll be honest, I was walking down all of the aisles looking at, all of the products that are out and about and some of the new stuff. And I kind of personally walked by your booth of Code of Silence, and it caught my attention in a very positive bow hunter friendly way. And so I said, man, and then I stopped in the booth. I had a little conversation with you and some of the other guys that were working the booth, and here we are.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. I appreciate you stopping by. It was good chatting to ATA. We had a great show, and a lot of people had similar experiences, I think, of, you know, maybe not being familiar with the brand, but immediately being captivated and intrigued with, you know, the relevancy of what we're bringing to the table.
Yeah. And it's also cool. You guys are an Iowa-based company, correct?
Well, we're split a little bit there,
okay.
Actually, Dan. So I'm actually in Nebraska. My partner, Darren Youngblood, is in Iowa.
Okay.
Selfishly, I wish I was in Iowa. I get to hunt Iowa about every 4 years, and it would not be hard for me to want or to hunt there every season if I had a chance.
Yeah, I think that's a comment that every hunter would like to make.
Absolutely.
So, what part of Nebraska are you from?
So, extreme western. Kind of lower panhandle.
Okay.
If you're familiar with Nebraska, we're not that far from Wyoming. I'm only about, it's exit 59. So we're just under 60 miles from the Wyoming border.
Okay.
Kind of sit right above Colorado, to the south. So this is the home of Cabela's is what it's known for.
And Sydney. Yeah.
I had a past history with Cabela's, which some people are aware of. I spent, 30 great years there, and just for a variety of reasons, we're still here and like the town. It's small town America, and there's a lot of good reasons to stay. And so I'm happy and making the business work out of Sydney right now.
That's awesome. Well, and you're also, I mean, you're not only in whitetail world, but you're also in that crossover area where there's both whitetails, mule deer, and I'm assuming there's some antelope as well.
Yeah, actually Nebraska, you know, some people are probably cringe when I tell this story, for selfish reasons, you know, but Nebraska is a little bit of a sleeper antelope state. It's a little bit harder now to draw as an out-of-stater, but it's probably, you know, my biggest passion, at least until the end of October, is chasing antelope. And we have some fantastic opportunities for antelope out here, particularly archery.
Yeah. Yeah. And the tags, like you said, the tags are for Nebraska at this time, especially for archery, are easy to get, not only for whitetail mule deer, but for antelope.
Well, that's not actually accurate, Dan. So
oh, it's not.
It has been that way, but now they've capped the antelope archery out-of-state tags at like 250.
Okay.
They're literally sold out in about 20 minutes.
Okay.
Which is a whole nother story. It was over-the-counter unlimited until I think 2020.
Okay.
And then they had some challenges, so they've gone to this new rule. So it's they're obtainable. You just have to be on the spot and online when that opening window hits, and you can get a tag. But anybody that's sleeping at the wheel is probably gonna be out of luck.
Yeah. I guess I was referring to 2014. That was the first time I ever went and hunted Nebraska out west over in the sand hills out there. And I ended up getting, I got a deer tag, an archery deer tag, and then an archery antelope tag. And I was able to get both of them over the counter, no issues. So a lot's changed since then. I have to remember how long that's been.
Yeah, the deer tags are still readily available.
Yeah.
But the antelope, they had quite a change there, and we'll see if that changes long-term. It's like I say, they're still available, and the hunting's fantastic. You just have to be in the front end and get online right away to have a chance to have an antelope tag.
Yep. All right. So you mentioned that you spent 30 years working for Cabela's, and we don't need to educate the listeners on what Cabela's is, but what was your job at Cabela's?
Well, for the majority of those 30 years, I was in charge of the hunting clothing area corporately. Mm. I did some different things. I spent some time in Canada when we opened the Canada operations, and I worked in the brand management area. But for the most part, you know, 22, 23, something like that years out of those 30, I spent running the hunting clothing area.
Okay. And so there is the crossover, right? You have this knowledge base in a clothing and apparel, which I'm assuming helped cross over into this new path. Now, 30 years for a company sounds to me like, did it start off as a pet project? Did it start off as, hey, I want to quit? Or did you just retire and say to yourself, hey, I want to keep going doing something that I love?
Well, I think it's, you know, sorry to be cliche, but it's sort of in your blood.
Yeah.
When you spend that much time at a particular job or skill, you know, putting a skill set together. I left Cabela's, you know, and just after 30 years, you can imagine, was, you know, great, a lot of success. And there was some transition in the ownership of Cabela's, and it just seemed like a good time to do something different. And very well networked in the industry, had some work I did with some variety of people I knew, and it really kind of, I won't say it's a pet project, Dan, but like anything, you know, we did at Cabela's, it was always about need based. You know, it was no matter what you did, you were trying to fill a hole in the need side of the industry. And you would think that after 30 years, you'd think you'd have every need covered, but I really didn't feel that way, particularly from a technical end use. I don't want to say bow hunting end use, even though I'm probably more passionate on that side. You know, bow hunting clothing sort of is ambidextrous across rifle, crossbow. You get it. I mean, it's archery clothing works everywhere. It's just it takes a little bit special type product to for really close range stuff. But anyway, as an archer, just really didn't think that there was a system out there that made everything come together at the level it should.
Yeah.
There was quiet stuff out there. There was warm stuff out there. There was well-fitting stuff out there, good camouflage stuff out there, but really didn't think anyone was bringing it all together in a system that, as we say, has enabled hunters to be more successful in the field. And we just kept coming back to that, you know, as much as could kind of get by with what we had in our arsenals, is said, you know what, there's an opportunity and a need for better.
Yeah. And so were you still working for Cabela's when this idea popped into your head, or was this something that happened after you left Cabela's?
It happened quite a while after I left Cabela's.
Okay.
I left Cabela's in 2016.
Okay.
And we really started putting this together in about 2020.
Okay. All right. So that's when the companies, would you say that the concept and the birth of the business started in 2020?
That's pretty accurate. Yeah.
Okay.
I think, you know, in theory started earlier than that, you know, just, wishing it had better, wishing it had different, you know, started, you know, I think long before that. And then I think by 2020 just said, you know what, we need to get serious about this. We're going to do something, and had a couple ideas, and it took a while to make it come together.
Yeah.
It seems pretty simple now looking at it. And it's like, how did we spend literally, you know, more than 2 years to get to where we are? But like anything, you know, that's done right, it's not an overnight type process.
Yeah. And so when you're sitting there, you know, and you're like, God, I you know, you've identified what you feel is a hole in the market, and you said, well, I know about this. I know about clothing and things like that. What was the tipping point where you ended up pulling the trigger, so to speak, and saying, hey, I'm going to start up my own company?
Well, several things. And I don't know if there was an aha moment necessarily. We had if Darren was sitting here, he'd tell you similar stories, you know, but there was a couple, I guess, just eye-opening type experiences. I had a good buddy that was going back east and had literally a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to kill a world-class 200-plus inch deer that was on camera. A guy had been watching it, and somehow he networked in to get a chance to go hunt this deer. And he was saying, I got to get this right. What clothing would you take? And I was literally like, well, you know, this one'd be really good, but, and this system is really good, but if you want something that's really warm, it's this. And, you know, just through that conversation, it was like a real, I guess, reality check on the fact that there wasn't a go-to type clothing system that I was willing to endorse off the top of my head. And that translated into saying, you know what, if after spending 30 years in the industry and all my exposure and all the name brands that are out there and, you know, the level of hunters that I hang out with, and I don't have a go-to, you know, it made it real, Dan, to
yeah.
say, you know what, there's something here. Let's do it. And it was encouraged. I think as soon as we started the conversation and said, we're going to get serious about this, we had a lot of people not jump on board, but to say, totally agree with what you're saying. Totally agree with the theory, the need. If you can, you know, it's even in one of our kind of many taglines of the need for better is obvious. And so with that in mind, we move forward.
All right. So you identified this gap or this hole you felt that you could fill based off of a conversation you had with a guy who was heading east to hunt whitetails. At that point, there's a whole nother conversation, right? You have to be realistic. Like, you don't just go in and you just don't start a company, right? You have to write it all out. You have to make a plan. You got to talk about material. You got to talk about the distribution chain. You have to talk about, you know, the construction of the product and what pieces you're going to bring to market. What did the next, I guess, once you pulled the trigger and said, I'm going to start a business, what did all of that look like before you actually had a prototype to mess around with?
Well, you can imagine with my background, you know, I'd been down that road a few times on, you know, you identify a need in the marketplace and you say, you know, how are we going to fill it? In this case, looking at it, saying, you know, it was more technical archery gear that was needed. It was not just one thing though. It was really about quiet. It was really about warmth. It was really about fit. And it was really about camo as well. And I know that sounds a little bit, you know, interesting, I guess, in that you say really after, you know, Jim Crumley, kind of the grandfather of modern camouflage, was started in 84, I want to say, 85. Yeah. And so really after, you know, that many years, there's a need for camouflage. We really thought there was something different. Even some of the higher end brands that were, you know, kind of toying with the space that we're talking about in the market really thought that, you know, one of the things they were leaving on the table was the concealment side. So It was about quiet. It was about warmth. It was about fit. It was also about function, you know, and not crazy function, but just having the right storage, right, you know, accessory pockets, right features in the garments or products, and then the right fit, and then concealment. So those were sort of our big five. And so there's not a one size fits all. Oh, it's this fabric, or it was a process to say, okay, what fabric fills this need? And went down that same path, I guess, to sort of check the box on all of those, which is part of the reason it took us, you know, two full years to get ready.
Yeah. Yeah. And so I want to talk about this camo, right? Because when you start a clothing company or a garment company or a camo company, however you want to say it, you have two options. I look at it this way. You can lease license a camo pattern from like Realtree or Mossy Oak or somebody else, or you can come up with your own. Right. And you told me that there was like an interesting story behind the concept and the actual pattern that you guys have on your clothing. So I want to hear that.
Okay. Well, yeah, it's, you know, I think probably without too many exceptions, you know, most camouflage designs out there are someone's baby. You know, they're someone's theory, or most typically their artwork, or someone has gone in and designed a pattern to their perception of what's going to work, which is great. We really wanted this to be not our own pattern, but something that was scientifically based on a system that would, you know, systematically blend into the woods as well as possible. So went through a long process of, again, going back to the fact that this is primarily an archery type system, and most archery hunting is done, you know, elevated from a tree. We went through a process of saying, okay, well, if guys are hunting in a tree, what height are they at? And so we did a survey with a number of hunters across the country, mostly in the Midwest, and said, what's the average tree stand height that you're sitting at? And we came up with an average of 14.8 feet. You put a 6 foot person in that 14.8 foot stand, mid height, they're at 17.8. And then we went into a variety of trees. We used 100 trees. We didn't want to go crazy. We wanted to keep it practical, but we went into 100 trees in five different varieties and looked at that. I'm going to round it up to 18 now. At that 18 foot mark, what is the size of the branches, and what is the density of the number of branches? And that drove the element composition in the pattern. So it's called S18, which is short for Stand 18. But, and I'll be honest, which I don't know any other way. You know, some of the trees we looked at have zero branches. They're a straight trunk. And some of them look like a, you know, literally an apple tree with branches going everywhere. And so this pattern is still an average of those, you know, of the breadth between those two. But at least there's some science behind it to create, you know, what is going to be the most probable type design to fit in the surroundings that hunters are finding themselves in a tree.
Gotcha. And so there's a little bit of a method to the madness. It's not just you sat down with some colors and said, hey, I'm going to create a camo pattern.
Exactly.
Okay.
You know, I could have done that, and I've done that before in my career. And it's just, you know, just really wanted this to be objective.
Yeah.
And then at the same time, objective to the science of where people are sitting. And, you know, I sit pretty high in a tree dam.
Yeah.
I find myself, which is another part of the story too, of why we did the camo. But I mean, I'm sitting 25 foot, sometimes higher, for a variety of reasons, but it's not about me. It's about, you know, where hunters are at. And I have very few stands. They're probably at 14.8 feet, but it just made sense to do this randomly on where hunters are sitting, not wherever where Darren are sitting.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. All right. So that takes care of the camo pattern portion of it. But when you guys started to come up with the material and then the material composition of how you were going to take, I don't know, multiple different types of fabrics and intertwine them and get your layering and things like that. What did that conversation look like?
It's a great question. I'll try to be as simple and concise here as I can. There's a lot of things that went into this. Again, you know, if you remember me saying I was trying to solve the quietness side,
right?
Trying to solve the warmth side, and then still camo is great, but we really wanted a different approach to camouflage aside from the design.
Yeah.
And the good news there, if I kind of bring those three pieces together, is that in creating a quiet fabric or choosing a quiet fabric like we have in our two main shell fabrics, you end up with a very high loft. And that high loft gives you great light absorption versus a flat fabric, which is, if you ever go touch pet your dog when they're laying in the sun, you feel how warm they are, that their texture of their hide, of their hair, absorbs light, which does two things. It warms them, but it also absorbs light from a camouflage perspective, which everything in the woods does as well. So trying to be concise here again, but so in finding a fabric that was very high textured, it fed into the fact that the fabric was going to be warm. The high loft was going to make it quiet, but it was going to feed into the different level of concealment that we wanted as well. And shifting gears here slightly, but I would tell you that the high texture of our fabrics, not just the camo, is a huge part of why it conceals the hunter so well, and why, in fact, why hunters are not getting the results out of camouflage that are probably entitled to, in my opinion. So again, really had a trifecta there of, hey, you got a great new quiet fabric or fabrics. They're also very light absorbing that is going to help you on the warmth side. But more importantly, it's going to dramatically help you on the concealment side.
Okay. And
makes sense?
Yeah, it does. And so the other is fleece, and you guys do some wool. Was that like, for me, now this is just personal. I've been bow hunting for a lot of years, and I've been through a lot of hunting gear, and I've found that wool has an absolute awesome benefit to any type of hunter, period. Right, whether you're out west or whether you're sitting in a tree stand. Was wool and fleece and integrating those always a, you know, were you always going to do that, or did it start off as something else?
No, I would say that, again, going back to the bigger picture here slightly, Dan, I was more focused on an organic type shell. So wool being organic, cotton being organic, polyester being synthetic. So really wanted a organic-based type shell. In my opinion, from a camouflage standpoint or a natural standpoint, and again, sorry to be sort of cliche, but you know, natural is natural. So if you're trying to look like the woods, you know, the more polyester you use, the harder that's going to be. The more ink you use, the harder that's going to be. And so when you think of conventional camouflages that are typically high content poly, probably high tech, high content ink, it's just the job of concealing you gets harder. So I was more focused on organics, which wool would be, and wool is my favorite as well. There's a lot of attributes of wool that are beneficial. And so, yeah, I think if we had a coach's kit on the organic side, it was definitely wool. And we started out with very high compositions of wool. But at the same time, everything you'll see us do, Dan, is practical. You know, if we'd have done 100% wool, the durability of it would be suspect. The washability, dryability of it would be suspect. And so we really found a balance that we thought was between the concealment side, the affordability side, durability side, and the care of the product would work. And so that's where we landed. I would probably have a little higher content of wool if I had my choice, but I think you'd find the downside of that would be, you know, problematic over time.
Yeah. Okay. So now here we are, you got the idea for the materials, you got the idea really for like the entire concept. And then you have to kind of think about what garment specifically you're going to bring to market first or to test out. And I notice right now you guys have almost three different systems, which to me looks like a warm, cool, coldest, warmer, you know, there's three different levels all having to do with temperature. How did you guys decide how to break that down? And then also what garments to introduce into those specific lines?
It's a great question. You know, it's whitetail hunting in the Midwest, which is really our focus right now. Tree stand scenarios, you know, in stationary scenarios. It can vary, you know, so much by time of year, obviously, and then temperature in those times of year. I mean, those particular times of the year, you know, I think everybody can relate. And sitting on November 6th, I've sat in everything from 80 degrees to 10 below in the same state and the same tree stand, and it varies that much. And so it's not about just, oh, we're going to target the rut. Well, what's that mean, you know? And further, it varies between Oklahoma and northern Minnesota, obviously. So we really had, you know, four series to start with. We only introduced three of them, Dan, that you pointed out, but it was really a cool weather, colder weather, really cold weather, and extreme cold. We opted to leave one on the side for some time, and thought that the lower two, the cool and the colder, and then the extreme cold, kind of had it covered. So we'll see what happens with the fourth series. But anyway, so you have those three different systems to match a variety of conditions and hunting styles to some degree. Even though I said it's all about tree stand, there's active tree stand hunting too, where you're covering more ground like a saddle hunter is, walking in farther. So our lightest series is also more breathable. So anyway, I just think about those three series is really about designing the features and the function of those garments to match each of those basic temperature and climate scenarios.
Gotcha. Okay. And so you, what were those first products that did that you brought to put prototype?
Yep. So we have our, you know, our most active series, our lightest weight series is called the Verdigris series. It was about creating some mobility in the garment. So we've left out, well, I hate to say it's not windproof. We have a very great performing wind product we call a wind seal that we use in our in the other two series. We left it out of the Verdigris series just because we wanted it to be more mobile. It was temperature ranges getting into the 40s and 50s. But even though it doesn't have that formal wind seal in it, go try to blow through it. I mean, unless it's, you know, blowing 30 out, you're going to say that stuff's highly windproof. Okay. Our fabrics, our two main fabrics are just, you know, they're 300 gram fabrics. They're tightly woven. They're wool based. You know, they have a lot of just natural thermal properties to them without, you know, the adding other technologies. So anyway, we had the Verdigris series, which is the more mobile series, which is not windproof. In our middle series, we really wanted to hit what we thought the core hunter, whitetail hunter in the Midwest was finding themselves in. And some people say that's, you know, it's our core rut wear or our core, you know, kind of late October, November series. And that's probably fair. It's called our Zone 7 Versa series, Versa being a key word because it's built to layer under or wear by itself from a fit and function standpoint. And literally that series, this series does have a windproof layer in it. But I've hunted in everything from 5 degrees to probably 50 degrees in that series. And then I'm layering, under it or not layering under it based on those conditions.
Yeah. Okay. And so, and then the last one that you have is the, what Cold Fall?
It's called the Cold Fall series and spelled F J A L L on fall. That was a name I always was intrigued with. It's actually Scandinavian for mountain. So it's technically, it says Cold Mountain. It was a cool name, and it's the big dog. It's a workhorse of cold weather clothing. I'm very proud of that series. It's to me, it's the heaviest clothing that you can still successfully bow hunt in. And I just sort of smile when it's zero out because I think I froze so much in my early hunting career in those conditions and still toughed it out anyway. And I put that series on, and now when it's, you know, I've hunted down to 16 below in it, and I'm talking about air temperature, not wind chill. And of course I'm layered up when it's that cold, but I really feel like I'm cheating a little bit.
Yeah.
It's that good.
Yeah. And so in these three series, as of right now, it seems to be a top, a bottom, so a pant, a jacket, or a three-quarter zip, and then a stocking cap or gloves or something like that. Now, when it comes to coming out brand new, right? You can't launch everything at one time, right? So, my next question that I have for you is, as you guys progress, are you guys going to be introducing a base layer so you become more of a one-stop shop instead of having, you know, people want to use your stuff but then also rely on another brand for their base layers or socks?
Absolutely. You know, we're very system-oriented. You know, I think just by nature, and I think whitetail hunters, as they mature in their sport, you know, start to put everything together in a lineup and a system. And that goes into packs, that goes into accessories, it goes into the way they carry their gear, the way they store their gear, the way they haul their gear, the way they control their scent. And, you know, having a complete system from, you know, next to skin to the outer shell is definitely an obvious need and where we want to head. Same time, you know, can't do it all right now. And we're very committed to staying true to a few of our core, you know, performance values, the camouflage side, which I touched on earlier on the light absorption side is key. It would be really easy to do base layer for us, for example, right now in a synthetic and use a heat transfer print method, but it's not going to be where we want it. And so as we can develop products that deliver on our core performance values, absolutely we'll be all over them, but we're not going to do it just to do it without having a point of difference that's true to kind of what we stand for in the grand scheme of things.
Yeah. And so as you guys start to, you know, test out some of this stuff, did you guys ever have to go back to the drawing board and say, hey, listen, I don't like this prototype. I want to scrap it and start over, or make some adjustments to get it to where it was ready for market?
Only about 300 times. To the point of, you know, I could not patting myself on the back, I've arguably built more hunting clothing than anyone else ever has. And I've known a little bit for making changes and adjustments. I think I took it to a whole new level with this series. The point of some manufacturers I've known for 30 years writing me emails in the middle of the night saying, I'm about done with you.
Yeah.
And I say that laughingly. I mean, they weren't serious, but I mean, it was just like, you can't change this 100 times, Ev. So I think we were very anal about, you know, having it perfect. And I still tell you, it's not exactly as perfect as I want it, but it's really, really close, and it's really, really functional. And, but we're anal about, it's the little things that matter. I think you, and I hope your listeners can relate to that. It's always the little things that blow the, you know, shot of a lifetime or things like that. And we're really trying to take all those issues off the table and enable the hunter to be successful. And liabilities have no place in our system.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's awesome. All right, so now, you know, when you're creating these garments, when you take it to market, the thought of who's going to buy this, right? Who is your demographic? So elaborate on who your demographic is and what kind of hunting that you feel that they'll be doing.
Okay. That's a great question. You know, we look at the Midwest primarily in a stationary environment, sitting in a tree stand. So it's, you know, it's easy to talk about whitetails. That's our core focus. I think Darren and I are both highly, highly passionate in that arena. Spend an awful lot of time doing that. But I sure not drawing any lines either and saying, you know, and at the same time, you know, there's no geographic or sport limitations, species limitations on warm, quiet, well-fitting, great concealment, and actually great value too. So you still have to deliver on the core market and the core consumer. So it's a guy sitting in a tree stand trying to shoot a deer in the Midwest. That's what we know the most, and that's where we're focused. But huge halo, I think, outside of that. I do a lot of varmint calling, for example, and the camouflage aspect, what I'm talking about, is just a phenomenal asset when you're trying to get a educated coyote to stand there on a hill and hold still at 200 yards. I know that.
Yeah. All right. And so as you, as this demographic, you know, or as Code of Silence, you know, gets bigger and starts to grow, and you make, you know, hopefully you guys make some money and you're able to start putting money back into the, you know, into the business and expanding your lines, what do you feel is going to be like the first products that you're going to address, you know, maybe here in 2023 or even leading into 2024?
I appreciate the question, you know, and give you a little bit of a more elaborate answer than you probably expect. But Code of Silence, I think it's easy to talk about the audible side. You know, everybody wants silence is, you know, what you hear. For us, silence is about zero pressure or lack of pressure. So that's audible silence, that's visual silence. That's about, you know, just being, going unnoticed and unheard and keeping, you know, your hunting scenario as pristine and unpressured as you can. And so, you know, systems that deliver on that, whether it be, you know, scent systems, we have a backpack system we're introducing this year. I don't know if you saw that show or not, you know, that's, it's highly quiet, but it's very effective in carrying gear, rattling horns, climbing sticks, even your bow, clothes, combination thereof into the woods in an effective, discreet manner. And so has our product lines have a lot to do with overall stealth. And so we're looking at packs now, we're looking at accessories. We're actually talking, you know, about other geographic markets too. You know, I do an awful lot of stuff on the ground out here west, and some of the visual advantages that we have in the line are probably more relevant when you get at eye level with a mule deer or an elk or an antelope. And so we have some room to take the technologies into other geographics and other species, you know, type of scenarios.
Gotcha. Awesome. Now, in regards to what you're currently offering, okay, if there's a guy out there who has been listening to this podcast, he's intrigued about, or maybe he's looking for a new camo setup or some new clothing for this upcoming deer season here in 2023, why should he consider Code of Silence?
It's a great question. You know, I unplanned, unrehearsed answer, you know, which is kind of the way we roll. It's about quiet. It's about warmth. It's about fit. It's about overall function and, you know, gear storage. The concealment piece, even though it's cool, I mean, we get a lot of people that go, man, that's a cool camo. It looks really good in this picture. I would tell you that, and I don't try to advertise this because everything I just mentioned about the gear is true. It's a great reason to buy it, and it's really where we started. The concealment side is off the charts. I am spent ridiculous number of hours and ridiculous number of years in a tree stand, and the concealment aspect is we outkicked our coverage on it. We really did, and we're actually patenting some of the processes we go through on the light reflectance side right now, and understanding that why that works better. And I think longer term we're going to put a third leg on the stool of concealment, the two original legs really being color and pattern. But when you think about light absorbance, I think it's a really, really big deal. I tell anybody, buy this stuff because it's awesome. It fits good. It's well priced. It's super quiet, super warm, etc. But I'm like, wait till you get out in the woods and you don't get seen in it, and you'll shake your head and go, what's going on here? And it's a huge attribute to what we have, what we're delivering on.
Yeah. Awesome. Awesome. Well, Ev, man, good luck. Hopefully, 2023 is a huge success for you guys, and you get the opportunity to, get the new product line up and running for 24. And, if people want to find out more about Code of Silence and your line of camo, where should we send them?
Yeah, it's codeofsilence.com, just like it sounds. We have, you know, an awful lot of information about everything I've talked about today on there, and the 22 lines available on the site right now. The 23 line, which we've more than doubled it, got into a lot of tall sizes, added an awful lot of new products, packs I mentioned, will be on the site, you know, kind of late spring or so, Dan.
Yeah.
But I think there's an awful lot of good information that would expand on what we've talked about today.
Awesome. All right, Ev, appreciate your time and good luck in the future, man.
Absolutely. It's been a lot of fun. I appreciate you taking the time, man.